15 April, 1912. Talk at home of Monfort Mills, 327 West End Avenue, New York. Compiled from stenographic notes by Howard McNutt. A few days ago, I arrived in New York, coming direct from Alexandria. On a former trip, I traveled to Europe, visiting Paris and London. Paris is most beautiful in outward appearance. The evidences of material civilization there are very great, but the spiritual civilization is far behind. I found the people of that city submerged and drowning in a sea of materialism. Their conversations and discussions were limited to natural and physical phenomena, without mention of God. I was greatly astonished. Most of the scholars, professors, and learned men proved to be materialists. I said to them, "I am surprised and astonished that men of such perceptive caliber and evident knowledge should still be captives of nature, not recognizing the self-evident reality. The phenomenal world is entirely subject to the rule and control of natural law. These myriad suns, satellites, and heavenly bodies throughout endless space are all captives of nature. They cannot transgress in a single point or particular the fixed laws which govern the physical universe. The sun, in its immensity, the ocean, in its vastness, are incapable of violating these universal laws. All phenomenal beings, the plants in their kingdom, even the animals with their intelligence, are nature's subjects and captives. All live within the bounds of natural law, and nature is the ruler of all except man. Man is not the captive of nature, for although according to natural law he is a being of the earth, yet he guides ships over the ocean, flies through the air in airplanes, descends in submarines. Therefore, he has overcome natural law and made it subservient to his wishes. For instance, he imprisons in an incandescent lamp the illimitable natural energy called electricity, a material force which can cleave mountains, and bids it give him light. He takes the human voice and confines it in a phonograph for his benefit and amusement. According to his natural power, man should be able to communicate a limited distance, but by overcoming the restrictions of nature, he can annihilate space and send telephone messages thousands of miles. All the sciences, arts, and discoveries were mysteries of nature, and according to natural law, these mysteries should remain latent, hidden. But man has proceeded to break this law, free himself from this rule, and bring them forth into the realm of the visible. Therefore, he is the ruler and commander of nature. Man has intelligence, nature has not. Man has volition, nature has none. Man has memory, nature is without it. Man has the reasoning faculty, nature is deprived. Man has the perceptive faculty. Nature cannot perceive. It is therefore proved and evident that man is nobler than nature. If we accept the supposition that man is but a part of nature, we are confronted by an illogical statement, for this is equivalent to claiming that a part may be endowed with qualities which are absent in the whole. For man, who is a part of nature, has perception, intelligence, memory, conscious reflection, and susceptibility, while nature itself is quite bereft of them. How is it possible for the part to be possessed of qualities or faculties which are absent in the whole? The truth is that God has given to man certain powers which are supernatural. How then can man be considered a captive of nature? Is he not dominating and controlling nature to his own uses more and more? Is he not the very divinity of nature? Shall we say, nature is blind, nature is not perceptive, nature is without volition, and not alive, and then relegate man to nature and its limitations? How can we answer this question? How will the materialists and scholastic atheists prove and support such a supposition? As a matter of fact, they themselves make natural laws subservient to their own wish and purpose. The proof is complete, that in man there is a power beyond the limitations of nature, and that power is the bestowal of God. In New York, I find the people more endowed with spiritual susceptibilities. They are not mere captives of nature's control. They are rising out of the bonds and burden of captivity. For this reason, I am very happy and hopeful that, God willing, in this populous country, in this vast continent of the West, the virtues of the world of humanity shall become resplendent. That the oneness of human world power, the love of God, may enkindle the hearts, and that international peace may hoist its standards, influencing all other regions and countries from here. This is my hope.